Hi, my name is Nicole Pucci, and you're listening to Ralph Pucci, the podcast. We're thrilled to welcome you to our second season. The theme of this season is Power Couples in the Arts, and we have a really amazing lineup planned for you. Today's guests are the epitome of a power couple. We're so honored to have the legendary designer Nicole Fuller and her husband, the illustrious painter Alexander Ulish, at Pucci for a lively conversation. We recorded this conversation back in March, literally 1 week before the world shut down due to COVID-19. And to be honest, we held on to it for a while, wondering when or even if we should release it. We didn't want to be tone deaf or inconsiderate to what was happening in the world. The conversation is at times very fun and light, and at other times deep and serious. The COVID-19 is not even mentioned once. It's a wonderful reminder of what life was like and what it will hopefully be like again before too long. In today's conversation, you'll hear about Nicole and Alexander's early lives, their philosophy around work, how they spend their time, and in their advice for people trying to break into the field. I hope you're as inspired as we were. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy.
Welcome, Nicole and Alexander. We're so excited to have you here today. A dynamic, artistic couple, and we're so excited to hear the story.
Thank you, Ralph. We're happy to be here.
Very much.
So both of you have such interesting and dynamic careers, and I read that both of you grew up in families of artists. Tell us a little bit about your childhoods. How did this all come to be? What were you exposed to as young kids to turn into such fantastically creative adults?
I'm an only child, so both of us are completely only children.
Only children.
So that comes with its own set of long stories. But I remember my mom is a sculptor and painter, Barbara Perlman. And I remember just, it was the cliche artist household. You know, my mom would pick me up from school, and we had a 63 Ford Falcon. And I remember she just come, and her hair would be blowing, covered with paint, and her hair covered, just completely covered. She'd pick me up, and I was so embarrassed that she was coming to pick me up when all the other kids had these normal parents and these normal, you know, little lunches. And it was an unusual, beautiful thing. And a lot of times I'd go, we had a studio in back of the house, and I would go and I'd watch through the window, and I would just, didn't know what I was really watching. But just as I got older, I realized I was watching color theory and being able to see how colors came together. And it all bleeds into everything that I do. And I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world.
It sounds like an exciting childhood.
Were most of your friends artistic growing up?
No, it was weird. I don't think, I was really intimidated by it. Even though I grew up within New York City, my mom had all these unusual, really special and unusual creative people. John Kelly, the performance artist. We had Robbie LaFosse. We would have all the people, you know, from the New York City Ballet. They would come over, and it was this unbelievable mix of some of the most creative people. And, I'd be this little kid, and you know, you would have the New York City Ballet, and they would ask to see my feet. And then they would, you know, they were like, this kid's a dancer. Do you see the way his foot is? But I was clumsy.
As I say, they had that raw.
I know. They
did. Oh, you got some moves.
But I don't know. You know, I do.
You do have a few moves.
Like Thanksgiving, we'd have my mom would hire people from Juilliard who weren't going home for Thanksgiving. And we would have performances from Juilliard, and John Kelly would perform. It was such a special childhood growing up like that, especially with someone so talented. She is one of the greats.
And that's fabulous. And Nicole, you grew up in New York City too, and you were in fashion.
Yeah. So my mother, also an artist, also, you know, I'm an only child, and you know, we're both raised by sort of single women, essentially, really strong, powerful, wonderful, colorful women. And my mother was originally a model, and so had a lot of fashion friends, fashion artistic friends. You know, she was really good friends with Scavullo, and you know, she was always at 54 and New Warhol. You know, she kind of like was with a lot of them. And my mother was, she wasn't, you know, in regards, Lexi's mom was like sculptor, painter. My mother painted, she sculpted, she did photography, she, you know, would do fabric installations. I mean, my mother was very, very sort of all over the place with her art, but she was everything. She could draw like nobody's business. I mean, her illustrations, we found one of her illustrations actually. We're slowly, you know, going through some things, and she drew this beautiful illustration. I mean, it's like incredible. So she was, not only came from fashion and was around sort of like the fashion lot, but also around all the artists in New York at that time, and traveling a lot. So I traveled a lot with her, and we were in Europe. So I feel, you know, for me, New York is my home, but I feel like Europe has a really strong, I have a very strong connection with Europe, especially London.
Yeah.
London's like my second home, really. And that's really because of my mother, you know, and I didn't really grow up, I didn't really want to be around other children. I really was around my mother and her creative friends, whether they were in fashion or photographers or directors or artists or sculptors or, you know, singers or dancers. I mean, my mother really kind of touched upon all of it. You know, she had a beautiful voice. She danced. She, you know, music was always in our house. You know, we always, always, from the second I woke up to the second I went to sleep and then some, my mother... There was like a soundtrack. There was like this creative soundtrack to our lives. And it was really, really beautiful.
What were those? What were some of your favorite songs?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll tell you another thing about my mother. She was a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. You know, she loved, which is very much like myself. People always say to me, like, what's the one thing that, you know, people don't know about you? And I'm like, well, I love racing cars. You know, it's true.
Where do you do that? Upstate New York?
Yeah, upstate New York, yeah. We don't do it as much as we'd like to, but we really have to.
The Skip Barber School. I think that's the Skip Barber. We were going to go to, Oh, yeah, when we started dating. Oh, my God. Like, that was like...
We were, like, living parallel lives.
I was like, this is a woman. I think all the blood rushed from my head. And I'm like, this girl, either we're going to die together the first week. It's going to be really romantic. And it's like I fly through the windshield or
it's going to be like leaving Las Vegas or we're going to go the distance.
Exactly. And, I'll always remember that. But, yeah, no, music, too. I grew up with classical music nonstop. I'd get a quarter for every time I got one of the pieces correct. And so I ended up getting a lot. But I'll let you
Music, go. You know, what I was going to say is a lot of, you know, my mom was sick on and off in my childhood. So I don't have as vivid of a memory as, you know, Alexi does with certain things, because I think in a defense mechanism of feeling pain of potentially, I always felt like I was going to lose her, you know. So our time together was so intense and so strong and so important and so amazing that in a strange way I blocked a lot of it out, but I have flashes of memories which are really, really beautiful. And, you know, some of my fondest memories are, we had a house in Southampton, so we had holidays there and summers. And, you know, so for the Hamptons, you know, the Hamptons to me are, I feel her so much. You know, she loved the ocean. She loved the sea. She was super inspired by nature. You know, she really taught me to find beauty in all things, you know. And I remember going down Meadow Lane with the top down. My mother always had convertibles, blasting music, two of us blonde babies in the wind. And I was like a little baby blonde baby and just kind of like singing on the top of our lungs, you know, and just there's nothing else that mattered, you know. It was like we didn't have a care in the world and everything around us was inspiring, you know, as far as color palette and texture and visuals. And, you know, she really, you know, taught me. I didn't realize at the time, because I wasn't professionally trained to be a designer, she really taught me about architecture and structure and design and finishes and materiality and living, you know, inside out and connecting with nature and grounding yourself in a certain way that you can sort of really express yourself in these ways. And I didn't realize, you know, at the time I was just enjoying my time with her and having this beautiful childhood, but it was really powerful, you know, really powerful, you know, the connection and what I've learned from her, you know, instinctually, you know, for me, it's very instinctual. You know, I see it, you know, I see a complete vision in my head. My head is always like a running movie. Like I see images.
When you're designing a room, you see it sort of as a flash fully done.
In a way, yeah.
Cool.
I initially see a flash and then we build on that flash. Or if I'm designing, you know, a product, same thing. Like I initially see it and it comes very quickly. You know, it's almost like, you know, like it's like that movie, almost A Beautiful Mind. I mean, I remember everything in business. It's photographic, you know, so it's really, it's crazy, you know, and I've never been one for numbers, but I remember everything in business. I remember the images and then I remember the numbers, and it's very strange, but it was really taught to me from such an early age. You know, she really did teach me about everything, you know, even about food and, you know, we were eating quinoa and green juice like when I was born. She was a pioneer in every way. Yeah. And she was so inspirational and aspirational.
Yeah. One of the biggest things, I wish I could have met her mom.
Yeah.
I think we would have got along unbelievably.
Best buddies.
So yeah, but you know, it's beyond lucky to be able to have what we have.
Well, and I think, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but I think when you are raised by an artist, for me, you don't know boundaries because they don't really know boundaries. There is no fear, you know, there's really no fear. You know, you get something in your mind and you go for it and it's exciting. And there's no rules, essentially. You know, there's really no boundaries. And I think that's so incredible, you know, to have grown up in that way.
My wife lives like that. She's fearless, really fearless. Oh, and she doesn't know the word no, which is unbelievable.
I am afraid of the dark. Don't leave me in a country house by myself.
But having two creative, it was literally, it could have went horribly wrong. You could have had these two intense personalities that just came together and literally mangled each other completely the opposite. I just feel like we're growing and growing, and I support her and she supports me, and our work is very different, but fundamentally the same, because it's the same ingredients that we both use. We just use them in different ways. And I think that's really has caused a really healthy, intense, passionate dynamic. And I've rarely let anyone look at my work while I'm doing the process. And she's, you know, I show it to her and she gets me enraged sometimes because I want her to like it. And then I can't sleep. I'm like, so what do you think of this? And she's like, you could go further, go deeper. And I'm like, why did you tell me this at 11 o'clock at night? And I'm like, how am I going to sleep? I just want to go to the studio. I know. So I don't, you know, she really lives her life like a rock star.
And how do you guys live at home? Is it like, obviously you're a well-known decorator, one of the biggies in the world. Is it a beautifully designed home, or is it a bit more bohemian?
It's incredible what you do.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a design department.
It is. It's a place that I was living in for quite a while when I moved. I lived in London for a long time, and then when I moved back to the States, this is the apartment I moved into. And when Alexi and I met and moved in together, you know, he really wanted to get a new place. And, you know, understandably so, he wanted to create a new life for us in New York. And I really, you know, I just, you know, I wasn't really that open to it because, honestly, I was like, where we got? This is such a beautiful space. This is Chelsea, you know, why don't we, you know, gut it and then redo it ourselves? So I will say, it is designed, but it's more about the two of us, our worlds colliding and coming together. And he's got a great eye, you know, for certain things. And I think we did a big edit of what was mine, what was his, and then sort of curated our lives together. So it is designed, but it's a little more loose and relaxed. And it's a lot of art, you know. There's a lot of art on the walls. Like the real color comes
mostly from your art.
No. I actually love majority of the time other artists. I don't want to see my work.
We have a couple of your pieces. Yeah, a
couple of my pieces. Yeah. But you know, I love having other people's work and switching things out. And
you know, don't paint constant at the apartment.
No,
you go to your studio.
Yeah, I have my studio. I remember when I first, moved in. I really was looking for a studio. In the meantime, I was like, oh, I'll use the back office. And I'm like, what are you talking about? In my head, I was like, this is crazy. And I was able to find a kind of studio that fits to my work.
This is an interesting story because Lola Schnabel is one of my best friends. And she was also friends with him. And Lola is how we met, essentially. Yeah. So Lola, it was Art Basel Week.
Yep.
and in Miami, and I was flying down to meet Lola. Lola and I were working on a project together, and he was with Lola that day, hanging out. They were friends. And his really dear friend, Michele, who's also a movie director who lives mainly in Italy, was with him. And I landed, and I went to Lola was having a dinner party at Tata's, the Haitian restaurant in, I think it's gone now, which is so sad.
No, it's gone.
I think it closed. But anyway, it's in, a little Haiti, I guess, in Miami. Yeah. And I showed up to this dinner party, and Alexi was sitting at the head, and Lola was, you know, sort of here, and she scooted over, and then I scooted in. And he and I had this unbelievable connection. And I had happened to be throwing a dinner party at the Chateau Marmont a month and a half prior, and two of my dear friends went to the penthouse, and there was a party for a photographer.
Yeah, Tasia Van Ray.
Van Ray.
Yeah, I think so.
Was having a sort of like exhibition in the penthouse. And my two girlfriends went up during cocktail hour and they came back to the dinner. I was hosting like a 35-person dinner with like, you know, editors, clients, whatever. And they're like, we just met the most amazing artist. You have to come up to the penthouse. You have to meet him. Not to date or anything. They just know that, you know, I'm also an art advisor. I buy a lot of art and I love art. And I was like, I can't leave the table. I just can't. And cut to Miami Art Basel, he starts showing me his work. And I saw his work that night because my girlfriends were showing me his work. And I was like, were you at the Chateau? Do you know Jody Goubert? And he's like, yeah. And we had this unbelievable connection. And Lola tapped me on my shoulder. She was so cute. And she's like, you know, I really like this guy. Can you like go to the other side of the table? And I said, oh my God, of course, Lola. Yeah. I love you. Yeah. Goodbye. Good. Other side of the table. Done. But we had already exchanged numbers and, you know, the rest.
And the Chateau Marmont was our first date.
So it all came like sort of full circle.
So you're both obviously so creative. At home, are you just constantly talking about art and design and music and everything in that realm?
No. That's in a weird way. I don't. Yes
really?
And no.
I know like I can honestly say about.
Yes and no. We live it so much that when we get home after the studio
we literally
need our quiet time. I don't want to talk about anything to do with art. We just, and I think you too, in a weird way, the same. We talk about things that we're looking forward to doing the next day, but a lot of times we just love curling up and watching our favorite junk TV shows.
But like I do think it depends on what time of day it is. You know, I think after a long day, you know, we both tend to work kind of late or, you know, have engagements late, and when we get home, we kind of shut down at night. But I do think in the morning we do.
Oh no, we're not
like during
nonstop.
The day or on the like, weekends, we're nonstop. Like everything inspires.
I was thinking about
ways.
Night, but the morning.
We go to galleries together and the museums. And
yeah.
We go to galleries together. We go to museums together. We go to a lot of art openings. You know, we have a lot of, you know, friends that are artists and a lot of gallerists that are friends and a lot of museums that are, you know, that we love and a couple of museums that dear friends have. And, you know, so we're very, very involved in the art world. I feel like we live, eat, and breathe it. Like we don't really.
Yeah. You live it and breathe it.
You know, it's like, you know, you have, look, I think we're in a very competitive world. I think we're, I think people at this table are also very competitive doing what we love to do. We're passionate. You know, my wife, I can honestly say I've never seen anyone have this work ethic that she does. And also just, it's like we make a joke. I feel like there's different people have, sometimes people have Duracells in their core and that's how they go. Some people have like, you know, a battery. You know, some more. I honestly think like one day, like I'm going to catch her, like literally putting in a nuclear reactor in her chest. Literally. I think it's physically impossible the things that she gets done in a day. I mean, it's crazy. She's just not like other people. And I'm just like, this is just odd. I mean, she'll come in an obscenely late. She's always working. It's just, I don't think she separates work from life. We kind of, both of us do. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she gets home. If she sees a color of the sky that's changing, she just gets out and starts thinking of creating something that will have that color. And she gets obsessed about that color. And I think that's the way we both are. And, but yeah, no, she has, everything that she's getting and having and the success and, is from the cliche of hard work. A lot of people have talent, lots of people. And we all know that. But to be able to have a vision, a lot of people have vision, a lot of people have talent, but very few people can combine it and harness it. And being able to do that, and she has it all. And I'm just, aww, it's so, I'm so proud of watching it. And,
I paid him off before we got here.
I did. No. I have a new car after that. It's a classic. I've always bought it.
You have a ton of energy.
I know.
That's for sure.
So you both live, you live together in West Chelsea. Tell us about a perfect day, perfect weekend day in the neighborhood.
Okay, let's just be real, honey. Okay, no, like, just let's just get raw right now. Like, honestly, nothing. Like, I like to wake up and yawn and just, you know, give my husband a kiss. No, what really happens?
Which I don't think this is his favorite. I love my weekends in the city, which are few and far between. You know, in the summer, we're usually in the Hamptons, and in the, you know, from there on, we're in Millbrook. But when I get a weekend in the city, my favorite thing to do is kind of like lie in, you know, have my tea, read some magazines, hang out with our kitties. We have three Maine Coons who are just our family, you know, essentially they're our children. And then kind of like go out, you know, and just, you know, go get lunch and walk around and go check out a museum and go check out a bookstore or just go look around and just be on the street. Mm-hmm. I love the city. I love being on the street. I love walking the High Line. I just all of it. I really love it. And that's not his favorite, although I think he enjoys it.
It's like looking in the mirror and seeing completely just sideways. It's like, it's exactly what I don't want to do on weekends.
I just need to be
in the country. The city I love, but when Friday comes, I'm so emotionally exhausted from the intensity of work and also this amazing city that I completely need the opposite, which is just... silence. That's exactly.
Well, I feel like the city has a different heartbeat on the weekend than it does during the week.
Very different.
Yeah.
The city is so different on the weekend. I sort of enjoy it as well, even though I'm not here that often. Go to the, you know, the different galleries, the museums, and of course, trying to catch a great movie.
Yeah. So great to have a great movie and just walk to dinner and then walk home from dinner. I mean, there's just something so great about it. I mean, for me, the city is not for... just the youth, the city's for everyone, you know, and I think that's so exciting. I don't think you grow old in the city. I think you actually become energized in the city and in the country as well. I think it's important.
Well, you don't get energized because you have a nuclear reactor. You literally,
never have an opportunity to crash. You never need to say, I just need a little bit of space.
Not really. I need my sleep. I will say, I definitely sleep a good 8-9 hours a night.
Okay.
I'm a late night person and I'm not an early morning person, but I've always been a great sleeper. My mother used to have to literally like bribe me out of bed. So it's like I crash hard and I'm really hard to wake up, but you know, I've gotten better obviously now that I have a business and a full staff and I have lots of responsibilities, but I'm a great sleeper. So I go to sleep, I sleep 8-9 hours and then I wake up and I kind of start my day. But when I'm going, I could keep going, you know, and we've traveled and gone places when, you know, we're not really on our time zone with friends and, you know, I need a lot less sleep and I really could just keep going.
Last time we were in London, we realistically
slept a few hours a night.
We would stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning. Then she'd have meetings. I'd have meetings and it wasn't, you know, wasn't anything like, you know, where we were literally
with friends
just
and being friends, inspired with
wine,
the artists,
getting excited.
Dinners turns into drinks.
Yeah,
because, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
All these different places.
Where do you guys stay in London?
We stay at the Chiltern Firehouse.
Mm. Yeah, that's
we're like, you know,
it's like her loyal to Andre.
Yeah. We're loyal to Andre. Yeah.
It's like our little family.
Well, he does good hotels. There's no question
there.
About that.
He does, and honestly, the Chiltern Firehouse is. There's only, I think, 28 rooms. It's super intimate. It's so pretty. I like everyone, the staff. I mean, it takes us so long to get in and out of the hotel because we genuinely love all the staff. We literally hug and kiss everyone every day. It's like, we're always running a little late anyway, Rob. But we're always running a little late.
You know, it's interesting. His hotel in Los Angeles, the Chateau Marmont, that way. You know, I know you know all the people there. I travel, that's where I stay when I'm in Los Angeles. And he is good that way, creating sort of a team of, sometimes you go to a hotel and there's all different people there from one time to the next and you have no connection. But at Bellazza's hotels, particularly the two that you just said, it seems to really, I like that very much.
It's a certain personality. Like you have you know, the chateau, people who like the chateau and the people who don't like it. And it's very, it's either cut or dry.
Oh, yeah. No,
people
about
like
that.
Literally yeah. just, and we're, you know, I feel like
we're all chateau people at the table.
Chateau people. We've recommended the chateau to people. Yeah. Some people.
You were just there last week. Yeah. You enjoyed
loved
it.
I was there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
missed each
other. I got to keep closer touch.
So what are some of your favorite places to travel to? So obviously you spend a lot of time in London, a lot of time in LA, a lot of time in New York.
Italy and London. Those are some of our...
I think of like our favorite, you know, we love Italy. We, you know, we always say like, you know, we retire sort of half in Italy, half in New York and Millbrook and like the country here. Mm-hmm. We love London, honestly. I think London is like a second home for us, you know, and we have a lot of projects and a lot of collaborations happening in London. So I'm in London like every couple of months and he pretty much tries to come with me almost always because he has a lot of collectors in London and, you know, he's working on seeing which gallery he's going to go with in London, you know. So we always both have business and friends and we also have three beautiful godchildren in London. So there's like a whole other world
there for
us.
There's a reason to be there.
Yeah.
Do you find that you're traveling to London, does London influence your work?
I think London influences my work for sure.
I can see it.
Yeah, I really do. I think there's a big influence there. I also think it comes just in its entirety from Europe. I think for me, I feel starved. I mean, there's never been like a huge chunk of time that, you know, I didn't travel overseas, but there have been certain times where I've gone longer than others and I feel starved because I think when you go to Europe, London, Paris, Italy, Spain, you know, wherever it is, like you see things in a different light and you feel things in a different way. And it's so inspiring, you know, it's really so inspiring. You know, I also, you know, I don't get to go there as much as I'd like anymore, but I've been to Africa 9 times. Mm-hmm. Africa is one of my favorite places in the world. Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite countries in Africa?
So one of my favorite places is Lamu Island. Lamu Island, I went there probably for the first time about 8 years ago with a friend. I was designing her place, and Erin Beatty, and she owned the fashion brand Suno at the time. And Max Osterweiss, who was her partner, his mother has a house on Lamu Island. It's called the Suno House. And I'll never forget the first time I went there. I was like, well, this is how we all should live. I mean, it was like the most beautiful beach. All these people from all over the world, you know, you have both sides of the spectrum and you don't, there's no, your phones don't really work. You know, everyone meets at this hotel for cocktails at 7. So whether you're a bushman or a kite surfer or a princess or an artist, everyone meets there and everyone convenes together. Mm-hmm. And doesn't really exist in a lot of places in the world. And I feel like the world is so far away from this. And it's like this, it's like a great Woody Allen movie. You know, it's like you're in this moment and everyone's so interested in everyone's lives are so different. And it's just, it's beautiful. It's raw and it's beautiful. And, you know, the textiles and the Maasai and the jewelry and the people. And it's just, you know, you kind of, it's really simplified life there. But it's also so interesting and sophisticated at the same time, you know, and everyone sort of becomes friends and you go to different people's houses for dinner parties and, you know, you walk and it's wonderful.
It sounds incredible.
It's really incredible. Yeah.
Beautiful. What about Italy? What are your favorite places in Italy?
Oh, my. Well,
you love Lake Como.
Yes. That's still even though it's like cliche, it literally feels like completely a different time. You know, sometimes I thought if I ever had like a nervous breakdown, that's where I'm going to go. I'm literally going to be in those wheelchairs with like the blanket and literally looking just blankly into the water. And my
staring
wife comes like
lake.
Rolling me around.
I just come and like, feed him martinis.
I know. And like dribble the drool off. Exactly.
Dress you up for dinner.
Yeah.
Will you in?
Exactly.
Turn the music louder.
Yeah, exactly. She's like on the phone doing a deal with the furniture. And like, you know, she forgets I'm like, you know, I fall in the water floating. You know what I mean? What a beautiful way to go. My wife forgets and throws me in the water.
That's the way, yeah.
Exactly.
So when you travel to Italy, do you stay like for a month, or do you, with your life and your business, do you have the opportunity to spend a month, or is it just like for a week, 3 days?
Not really anymore. That's why I think, listen, you know, I don't...
We have the opportunity, just... We wouldn't be doing what we're doing.
You know, it's the thing is...
You have a business. It's a booming business. You got clients probably calling it all the time.
Yeah. I also I feel like, you know, for me, I don't know. Like, I love being able to go and come and go. I like being in Italy for like 7, 8, 9, 10 days and then coming back. Yeah. You know, I like being on the move.
But Alexander, could you spend a month there?
No.
No?
No. It's... Unless I've really geared up for it. Like, I need to be in the studio. Like, nothing
like,
happens.
Yeah, I think of, like, later in life when we retire and we're there.
We'll never really retire. It's like, but I'll have my studio.
But then we can spend months painting. There. But now it's like...
Right now it's like crunch time.
I don't know. You know, for me, I don't really feel like I'm ever working, even though I'm working. So I love what I do so much. So I love going and getting sort of fed in Europe. And
exactly.
We have a lot of clients there and interesting things happen. Yeah. But I love coming back. And I just kind of like the flow of things, you know.
Yeah, it's inspiring.
Talk about your paintings a little bit. I mean, I think they're amazing. I looked at them very carefully today for the first time, to be quite honest with you. And I mean, who are your heroes?
Who are my heroes? Chaim Sotin. Even as a little kid. And then, you know, at first, you know, my first was Egon Schiele. Mm. And then I think Kandinsky is one of my favorites. Gorky, Rothko, Twombly.
Twombly, yeah.
Oh, I all of a sudden I've been very excited about Mary Weatherford. And Katrina Gross.
Yeah, Katrina Gross.
Yeah, yeah, she's been really... exciting.
I think it's
those colorists really excite me. And, you know, I feel like my work is, you know, people will see, they'll go, oh, I see some Bacon, or I see Kandinsky, or I'll see this, or I'll see that. And I know people have to describe things, you know, they have to have references.
People like to compare.
But at the same time, you know, I feel like part of me is just from another era. And then I just feel like I'm creating stuff that's not derivative. It's just, I bring something I've been fighting for. You know, I want you to, Ralph, I want you to go and when you go into, if you see 1,000 paintings, you'll be able to point out that's an Alexander Jülich. And I just want to create a language that's mine.
Right.
But those are the people I just literally just will look at, and it makes me want to weep how beautiful their work is. And there's so many more, but those are,
Tell us a little bit about your artistic process. So when you get an idea for a painting, where does it go from there?
Usually it changes a lot. So I'll get really, like I'm looking at, there's a little blue of a painting on the wall, and that'll get me inspired. So when I go into the studio tomorrow, I'll have this idea of a blue, and I'll start to think of how I can incorporate it. And then, you know, maybe halfway through, I'll just paint over it. And so a lot of times... You know, it gets you excited. But a lot of times the things that I think I'm going to do aren't really what I follow through with. It's just it's the spark that gets me into the studio, gets me excited into the studio. But the way I like it is like, I love the unpredictability of it all. If I came in with an idea and executed it, that is exciting. To a rocket, building a rocket, expecting it's going to go in the sky. I kind of get excited when you build a rocket and it blows up before it even takes off. And then you have to pick up the pieces and then create something again. And that second version is really, really exciting to me. And then it turns into something completely different. Then it turns into a truck. And then it's a controlled environment to a degree, the unpredictability of it. But I like to go in to the studio like clockwork. I like getting there around 9:30, 10. And I worked probably around 3, maybe a little longer. I don't like taking breaks. So I literally stand, paint for 4 or 5 hours till there's nothing left. I don't like taking breaks. I feel like there should be one continuous thought. At least then when you're done, you're exhausted, then you come back and you do it. So it's this huge, long, controlled burst. And then there's nothing left. I literally just wiped emotionally out and then come home. And yeah, I'm done earlier than my wife, and she comes in 11 o'clock at night on the phone still working. And so I'm like, well, how do you, I have nothing left. Like, I'm exhausted. And she's, yeah. So
the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah. Yeah. The Energizer Bunny. But it's just getting in the studio, really just getting specific, carving, you know, try to get as truthful as possible. You know, and we talked about what your parents give you. I remember my mom said something so early to me when I, and it just always made sense. She goes, commit when you're painting, just commit to every stroke you do. Commit fully. And if you're lucky, you keep on being honest and commit fully to each stroke. By the end, you'll have a painting. And you don't, that's how you should think of it. So every stroke is not, random. It's just giving it everything I have on each one, and hopefully I get a painting at the end.
That's beautiful. And that's actually a good segue. So obviously you both picked really, really difficult industries, and you're both incredibly successful. What advice would you have for someone who's just trying to break into the field?
So that's an interesting question. It's weird, Julie, you know, out of all people, I'm not going to get it completely right, but I remember Julian Schnabel, I remember I was just listening to something and he was talking about what advice, you know, would give. And he said, pretty much don't take any advice, especially from people who are older than you. And, I was so confused by that, but I guess what I realized he said was, really don't take any advice in the sense that what works for me works for me. What works for you is going to work for you. Just take risks.
Believe in yourself. But when you believe in yourself, you have to believe in the deeper version of yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you can fake it. I think if you want to do something that's profound and important in life, you have to put in the work and you have to put in the time and you have to impress yourself first. Like if you're just skating by, you know, you'll be found out. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not about that. It's about really digging deep and really like, who am I? What do I want to say? What do I want to do? How do I want to do it? And really, really, it's about getting to know yourself and then believing in what you believe because you've defined yourself. You know what I mean? You've defined, I believe this and I'm going to go for this. And then really sort of, you know, putting it out there in the world. And I think it's about no rules. I think it's about being fearless. I think it's about, you know, really putting a goal and really whatever negative thoughts, you know, this is, in my mind, I'm a great meditator, but I'm really not. You know, I try to do my meditation and stuff because I think it really is nice and it works, especially because I run so fast. But I think what's really important in life is worrying does you no good because you can't control anything you're worrying about. I think that positive thought and positive intention and positive belief just in yourself is the most important thing. It's so powerful. And I think you cannot let negative thoughts or negative feelings or negative comments from anyone ever get you down because there is always that story you hear, you know, Cindy Crawford was turned away from 15 agencies. They said, you'd never be a model. She's the biggest model. You know, like you always hear these stories like this one would never play basketball. He's the best star. I mean, it doesn't matter what people say. What matters is what you do and how you, you know, dig deep and define yourself as an artist, as a person, as a business person. You know, you got to put in the work and you got to really believe in it. Then the world, you know, sees it and it's exciting. And I also think, for me personally, I'm always looking, you know, I have clients that will say, I just love what you did. You just do the same thing. I mean, a lot of people would be like, oh, great. That's so easy. Just do the same thing. And I'm the opposite. I'm like, do the same thing. I don't understand. I mean, we could maybe use that chair or that coffee table. We could maybe get a sculpture, or like, you know, but like, I can't do the same. Like, this is about you and your space and your interior, whether you're a person and it's your residence or your hotelier or your developer. Like, this is so individual. It's every challenge, every day, every new client, every new thing is a new exciting opportunity to do something exciting and powerful. And I don't want to say more powerful because I like to be able to look back and work and be so excited about the first thing I did, just as excited about the last thing I did. But you grow and you evolve and, you know, new artists come on the market and new things happen and, you know, the climates change and, you know, the mood changes. And I don't know, it's a really individual thing. But I just think,
live our life like that. I mean, if we had to do the same thing, I mean,
Well, thank you both so much. This was a wonderful conversation. You're both so inspiring and have led such fascinating lives. So we are very grateful for your time.
I think it was fantastic. I personally loved hearing the story. It's just, it's filled with passion, love, and excitement. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation featuring Nicole Fuller and Alexander Ulish. We were so thrilled to have them on the show. To learn more about Nicole, visit her website, NicoleFullerInteriors.com, or check out her Instagram page, at NicoleFullerInteriors. To learn more about Alexander and to see his amazing work, go to his site, AlexanderUlishArt.com, or follow him on Instagram, at AlexanderUlish. Thanks for tuning in. And please be sure to check out our next episode with the power couple Melissa Walker and Grammy Award-winning musician Christian McBride. Thanks, and see you soon.